While we're on the subject of books, in her new book of essays, actor Constance Wu suggests, quote, don't think about the girl making a scene, think about the scenes that made the girl. In her book, Wu takes us behind the scenes of her life. Yes, there's the professional part we all know a bit about, as the breakout star of the ABC sitcom Fresh Off the Boat, about a Taiwanese family living in Florida, and her role as Destiny in the critically acclaimed film Hustlers, and starring in 2018's Crazy Rich Asians, which made an estimated $238 million worldwide. But she also recounts important and sometimes painful moments from her young life, like a teacher who accused her of plagiarism and then tried to get all the other teachers to accuse her as well, her parents' strained marriage. But there are some warm memories, too. She's a serious love of bunnies. And many in our town will relate to her time waiting tables while trying to make it as a stage actor. But something many of us don't know about, and hopefully never will, is when the social media mob came for her because of a tweet, which led to a life-threatening breakdown. The book of essays is titled Making a Scene. It is out today. And just a note, everyone, this conversation may contain mentions of self-harm and sexual assault, so please take care. Constance, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So why a collection of essays?
That really came out of just the way I wrote it. When I first started writing it back in 2016, I thought it was going to be like a totally political feminist book. But then I'd read what I wrote. I'd be like, oh, this is awful. But then often there'd be one little sentence in my bigger political piece that would be a personal story. And it would be something as simple as like what a loaf of bread smells like, what my first car was like. And I thought, let me just write about those things because this is the only nice thing in the essay. And through writing about those personal experiences, I realized that this was what the book was supposed to be. And so it's not a memoir. It's a book of standalone essays that are all about formative moments or things in my life. Yeah, it just seemed to work best that way. So that's why I put it all together that way.
You have this cool device you use where certain conversations are like a script, or read like a play, like a script. How did you come to that idea?
You know, that was actually my editor's idea. She didn't write any of the scenes, but she thought, maybe try writing some of these more dialogue-heavy parts of your book into like a screenplay or a playwriting format. And I tried it as an exercise, and then I realized for some of those sections, it worked really well because you get to just see and the behavior and hear the words without sort of attaching my own spin onto it. And I guess that in a way lent an objectivity to those scenes that that I thought would benefit the reader in the book, because I really, while writing this, I really wanted to make sure that this was a fair book in terms of like representing everybody, all the characters in my life, in a fair and honest way. So even like somebody who raped me, you know, the producer who sexually harassed me on Fresh Off the Boat, I talk about the abuse, but I also consider what that person might have been going through. And I think putting in a scene format is helpful to do that because it takes you out of Constance Wu's voice and puts you in a more objective mode of reading.
And as you mentioned, you had to revisit some very difficult moments in your life, and you're very you're very candid about them. How did you navigate the retelling of those stories and protect yourself while you did it?
Well, writing is in a vacuum, right? You're in your room, right? And so it's like you can write it, and if you don't want it, let anybody read it, you don't have to. That's the beauty of it. And even that Fresh Off the Boat essay, that was the last essay I wrote. I was not planning on having it in the book at all. My editor really pushed me to write about it. She was like, this is what people want to know. And I'm like, but I'm done with that. I don't want to talk about that chapter in my life, you know? And then I decided, okay, I'll write it as an exercise for myself, and I'll never let anybody else read it. But it's interesting what happened with it is that I realized how much more that harassment and abuse affected me by putting the words down on page. I sort of compare it to like when you have a physical wound physical trauma, you have a scar, you have a bruise, you have some proof that it's there and you get to see it heal. Whereas when you have an emotional trauma, you don't have a wound to show for it. So putting it down on paper almost felt like that. It made me finally able to understand it and start healing from it. And that's when I recognized that it probably was important for the book, for other people, to encourage other people to do the same with their past traumas. Mm-hmm. So even though I didn't want to include it, I, at the last hour, was like, okay, I'll include it.
Yeah, you know, it's, and I was going to talk about it later, but since we brought it up, why don't we talk about it a little bit? And then there are a lot of other things to talk about in the book as well. You know, you write about sexual harassment. You write about, as you mentioned, a rape earlier. When you think about some of the misconceptions around harassment and forms of sexual violence, which ones did you have before you started really grappling with this and thinking about this and talking about this? And what changed? How did you change your thinking about it so that you could share your story and you could help other people who read this story understand about it?
Well, specifically with my chapter about rape, which that was a word that was hard for me to even say for a really long time. And I didn't realize it was a rape because I had a preconception of rape as this violent act of struggle that, you know, because in like Hollywood movies, you see it as this like violent act. And I didn't think of it as when I was raped, it was actually quite quiet. Mm-hmm. Because rape, by definition, is having sexual intercourse with somebody without their consent. And I did not consent, and I used my words. I actually said to the man, I said, I am not ready to have sex with you. No, I am not ready to have sex with you. I said it twice. That's how clear I was. But he just cooed and like kissed my forehead as if he knew better. And he was so gentle and sweet. And then he just did it anyway. And I didn't fight back. And some people have said that wasn't really rape. Talk to a real rape victim who has bruises, who actually fought back. But when you think about it, I'm half his size and we're in his apartment. He's being sweet now. My goal at this is to get out safely. And so I didn't fight back because if I start fighting back, he might start fighting me and he is twice my size. I am going to lose if he starts fighting me. So I just sort of gave up, you know, and afterwards I kind of like giggled to hide my discomfort. I made a bunch of excuses about why I needed to leave. And then I left and I got myself to safety and I tried to not speak to him or talk to him again. If he eventually ended up calling me from an unlisted number. But yeah, I mean, it's so obviously rape, but I think I was so filled with shame and guilt about so many other things that it was hard for me to have clarity about it. And it made me recognize it's important to talk about this because it's important for us to know that rape can be quite quiet. Mm. And you can even be friendly with your rapist afterwards as a means of protection. And I think we're too quick to judge rape victims and blame them when really if somebody says, no, I don't consent to sex, that means no, and you should stop.
My guest is Constance Wu. The name of her book is Making a Scene. I do want to remind people, if you're hearing this and you find yourself in need, the National Sexual Assault Hotline is 1-800-656-4673. We'll have more with Constance after a very quick break. Stay with us. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Constance Wu. Her new book of essays is called Making a Scene. So there's a story in here that blew my mind as I was reading it about this teacher who was convinced you plagiarized and just went out of her way to try to nail you and goes around and tries to get other teachers to say, could Constance have written this? No, there's no way. And years later, you call her up and you call her out on it. And she's sort of blasé about the whole thing, not really understanding like the impact that an adult can have on a child in that moment. What was it about that moment that stayed with you? And then why did you want to come back to it years later, track down this person and call her.
It has, you know, it's interesting because I have had objectively worse traumas in my life, but for some reason, that's the one that has always stuck with me. And I can't, it's been really hard. It always makes me cry fresh tears. It always hits the softest part of my heart. I think there are a few reasons for that. I think one is it was during eighth grade, which I think is like a pivotal time. For some reason, eighth grade is that year when, like, you know, things happen that affect you for the rest of your life. And also because it was about being believed. She didn't have proof that I plagiarized. So basically, I guess what she looked for was character references rather than proof. And she went to each one of my teachers and said, do you believe Constance was good enough to have written this? And they all said no, except for my drama teacher, Mr. Frizzell. He was the only one who said, of course she is. Of course she wrote it. And I mean, look what happened. I became an actor. My drama teacher was the only one who believed me. But this concept of belief, even though I think it's, you know, often attributed to sexual assault and the Me Too movement. For me, it actually goes all the way back to eighth grade and the truth not being enough. I did not plagiarize. There was no proof that I plagiarized, yet I wasn't believed by an authority figure. And therefore, I was punished for it, even though it was not true. And so I think that feeling of not being believed is personally really... has to do with sexual assault, I know, for the Me Too movement, but for me also personally has to do with this teacher way back in eighth grade. So much so that when I was in college and going through a lot of therapy, I called her up on the phone. I looked in the white pages. We had the white pages back then. and I said, you know, I want you to know that I really wrote that essay. I didn't plagiarize and was wrong of you to do that to a kid. And she kind of doubled down and like made some excuses and backpedaled. But the fact that it stuck with me that long, that I was like a college student, that I had to like call her, like to try to avenge this wrong that was done to me, it didn't actually work. It's always going to be a wound that's in my heart. I'm always going to be afraid people don't believe me. But now that I've gone through therapy, I have better tools to handle when those feelings come up.
In making a scene, you have this phrase, American problems, something you said your parents, things your parents wouldn't understand as yeah. immigrants. For what's an example of an American problem you faced alongside your siblings that maybe mom and dad didn't quite get that why it was important?
Well, with that particular story, I didn't tell mom and dad about it because this particular teacher, like, she had this kind of charm. She would like talk with a New York accent. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody loved and feared her, mm-hmm. the kind of the way you love like a Disney villainess, like Ursula and the Little Mermaid. And like she, it just, her personality overpowered everything. And my parents are bright, intelligent people. They're soft-spoken. Well, my dad is especially. And they speak with accents. And I remember at that time thinking that I had to protect my parents from this teacher's wrath, because this teacher is going to hear them and think that they're stupid, because a lot of people equate accented English with stupidity, which is ridiculous because it just means you know two languages. But people do equate that sometimes. And I was like, I'm not going to let her think my parents are stupid. I have to protect them. And that's sort of what I mean by an American problem. Parents are always wiser than their kids. Always. This is just a matter of, this is a truth that has to do with time that you've been alive. But with the kids of immigrant parents, there is definitely that conflict when it comes to cultural differences that I think should be expressed rather than what I did, which was try to take on all the discomfort myself.
You grew up in Richmond, Virginia, which is, you know, sort it's interesting because one, it was the capital of the Confederacy. So, you know, yep. I actually was curious what you thought during 2020. My sister lived in Richmond for a long time. And so what you thought about, you know, they have Monument Avenue where a lot of the Civil War heroes are very much celebrated.
Yes.
But when the Robert E. Lee statue came down, I'm curious what you thought as someone who grew up there.
I mean, my high school mascot was a Confederate rebel holding the Confederate flag. Our colors were blue and gray. Like our high school mascot that we cheered after in football games was the rebel. And that, it's no longer, which is great. And they took down all those Confederate monuments, which I that was really great, and I'm glad they did. At the same time, where I grew up, even though it was the capital of the Confederacy, even though my high school mascot was a rebel holding a Confederate flag, I wanted to make sure in this book that I expressed that I didn't experience bigotry and racism, at least not overtly or consciously, from the people I grew up around. I actually felt very welcomed. I feel like Richmonders are so loving and kind, and I have so much gratitude for my experience. Obviously there's systemic racism and, you know, so many other layers, but my experience of people, like the people living next door to you, was one of kindness. And I want to remember that and not be so quick to judge, while also doing things like recognizing that it was wrong to honor Confederate generals and to name your high school mascot after them. So I think it's possible to carry both feelings in your heart. And I try to do that in my life and in my book.
The name of the book is Making a Scene. My guest is Constance Wu. You're very candid in the book about this. It's hard to talk about. When Fresh Off the Boat was renewed for your final season, you had a moment which there was a lot going on with you, and you did that thing that a lot of people do, probably not as much now, and you tweeted something. You tweeted that emotion you were having at the moment. And the backlash was swift. It was harsh. It was all, you can just fill in the blank, all the bad words that it was.
Yeah.
How did you care for your mental health at this time as you were on the receiving end of a lot of negativity?
I don't think I did care for my mental health very well then, which is why I ended up in the emergency room. But that forced me to seek mental health help. Going to the hospital made me do that. I had to be under observation so that I didn't try to kill myself again. I had to be in therapy every single day for a while. And then I had to be in therapy 3 times a week and then 2 times a week. And now I'm still in therapy 1 time a week. But I had held so much in for like all my years in Hollywood that I, you know, and I hadn't kept up with my mental health. So in many ways, I think that even though there was an internet pile on, even though I ended up in the emergency, even though it was a really lonely, scary time for me, in a way, I'm ultimately, look at the positive that came out of it, which was that I finally got some mental health help that I needed. And now I have the opportunity to talk about how we all need to care for ourselves and each other better before rushing to judgment. Because sure, I know it looked bad. I'm tweeting, ugh, I'm so upset my show is renewed. And I just had this hit movie, Crazy Rich Asians. It looks like, oh my God, she thinks she's this movie star. She thinks she's, you know, too big for her britches. So it looks bad, but when somebody does something that's out of character for them, you have to recognize that that usually means there's something else going on. And I didn't talk about the abuse I suffered on Fresh Off the Boat because I wanted to maintain the reputation of the show. I didn't want to stain the reputation of the show. I wanted to preserve everybody's jobs on it that long. But I, you know, the abuse and bad feelings don't go away just because you will them to. They're inevitably going to come out somewhere. Unfortunately for me, it was on Twitter. I learned a lot from it.
I just want to dive in. For people who didn't read the book or who weren't or just joined the conversation, that you were sexually harassed by a producer on Fresh Off the Boat. That was what you were referring to. I'm sorry, continue. I just wanted to make sure people understand.
No, of course. Sexually harassed, intimidated, threatened. And I didn't know anything. I was so new to Hollywood when I got that show. I had just basically graduated from waiting tables for 10 years. But ultimately it opened up this conversation on mental health for myself, and that I hope to open up for other Asian Americans, because there's a stigma against it. There's a whole episode of Fresh Off the Boat where we even talk about how Asian families don't like to say I love you to each other because they don't like to talk about feelings and that vulnerability. And I don't think that's a problem if you live in a culture where that's the norm necessarily, although it's not my experience, so I don't know. But for an Asian American, where you grow up with your friends saying I love you to their parents, you see it on TV, it's considered a part of what it means to have a loving family. What does it mean when you don't do those kind of things? When you can't even say I love you to your own family, what does it mean when you want to actually say, hey, I need help, mental health help, talking about these vulnerable things? I mean, it's an even harder step, and it's one that I think it's about time that we took as a community.
In the book, we get a sense that you have your New York roots.
I lived here for like 10 years in New York.
What's something from that time that stays with you?
Oh, I mean, that was in my 20s. I mean, a lot of people focused on the fresh off the boat and the tweets for this book. But as you know, most of this book is not about that. Mm-hmm. I just think of like the boyfriends I had when I was here, honestly, you know, the love affairs, the struggle of, you know, trying to wait tables at night and then go to equity course calls in the morning. Sorry. And there's a lot of feelings that come with it, but most of the memories are, I have to admit, revolve around boys and romance and love. And that's why a lot of my book is about that.
The name of the book is Making a Scene. It's by Constance Wu. And I also want to point out, you know, we did a segment on this show, Constance, I want to say the name of it, about Asian Americans and health by Jenny Wang, PhD. The name of her book is Permission to Come Home, Reclaiming Mental Health as Asian Americans. It's a terrific book for anyone who's listening to this conversation. Yeah. Constance, thank you so much for making time today. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me.